Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the news, but who aren't necessarily politics gurus. So if you just want someone to sit down with you and strip it all back, make it make sense on simple, straightforward terms, then this is the podcast for you. I'm Julia Bell, and today is a very important day. The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, whose name you will have heard so much over the past 18 months, he finally sat down in front of the Lessons Learned Inquiry, which is made up of a committee of MPs who have been essentially interrogating various key players, various decision makers, and trying to work out what happened over the last 18 months. What went wrong? What went right? What can we learn moving forward in case, God forbid, we ever have to deal with anything similar to COVID-19 again? And this inquiry, this lessons learned thing, has taken up the news quite a lot. I think you'd have to have been living under a rock if you didn't hear about Dominic Cummings's go at this inquiry 2 weeks ago, which was quite a moment. Dominic Cummings, of course, is Boris Johnson's ex-chief advisor, ex being the operative word, because Dominic Cummings certainly does not work for Boris Johnson anymore, nor will he ever again, I imagine, after that display 2 weeks ago, because he basically spent 7 hours, that's how long Dominic Cummings was in there, 7 hours machine gunning as many accusations at Boris Johnson and at Matt Hancock as he could. In fact, I think he kept the most toxic nuggets of contempt that he could throw at just for Matt Hancock. He saved those just for him. You learn in that 7 hours that I don't think there's anyone in the world that Dominic Cummings despises more than Matt Hancock. He called him a liar. He said he's terrible at his job. He said he cares more about his targets and kind of looking good than he actually does about saving lives. And the most memorable quote of all of them, and there were many, was when Cummings said this about Matt Hancock.
I think that the Secretary of State for Health should have been fired for at least 15, 20 things, including lying to everybody in multiple occasions, in meeting after meeting, in the Cabinet room and publicly.
Rosie?
Oh dear.
I mean, what a thing. Considering these two men worked, you'd have to assume, incredibly closely together. Cummings was Boris Johnson's top advisor, and Matt Hancock is the health secretary, i.e. the guy in charge of the health sector during a pandemic. You'd assume that there would be some sort of relationship, but absolutely not. Dominic Cummings made that quite clear to us all. It was quite a day. I did a podcast about it at the time. The title of that podcast was "We Are Absolutely Fucked." Which is a direct, that's not me saying it, that was a direct quote from Dominic Cummings' testimony, which gives you a feel for how fruity it was and how complimentary it was of the way the government was being run. And Hancock's response to it at the time, so 2 weeks ago, was initially to just imply that the whole thing was bullshit. In fact, let me play you his reaction from that day.
Well, I haven't seen this performance today in full, and instead, I've been dealing with getting the vaccination rollout going, especially to over 30s and saving lives.
So there was Hancock at the time, who gave a statement to journalists who kind of caught up with him while he was walking along the street. And you heard him call the whole thing a, quote, performance. So basically, the whole thing is lies. That's what Hancock wanted to make out. And then today, finally, we got to see Matt Hancock sit down and get the chance to rebut some of those allegations directly. And just as 2 weeks ago the tone was it's all bullshit, that was very much the tone again today. I'm not the liar, Dominic Cummings is the liar.
So in a way I welcome this opportunity to tell you the truth of what happened, given the discussion that there's been over the past couple of weeks.
Now, the interview was 4.5 hours long, I think, today. So a lot was said, not as much as Cummings, but still a lot. Still enough for me to have definitely overdone my coffee intake for the day. The tone in general was calmer. It was less chaotic. It was less bizarre as well. And bear in mind that Matt Hancock is still a government minister. He still works within the establishment, if you want. So he couldn't throw anyone under the bus in the same way that Dominic Cummings had the freedom to do that. Dominic Cummings basically made it quite crystal clear that he didn't give a fuck anymore. Who cares? Whatever you want to know, I'll just throw it at you. And I'm happy to drag anyone down with me as I go. Matt Hancock has a line to toe. He has to look after collective responsibility, which is this idea that all the ministers within a cabinet have to like have each other's backs and they can't undermine each other publicly. And if they do, then it's really it's grounds for resignation because you don't believe in what your own government's doing. So we knew up front Matt Hancock wasn't going to drop any of the bombs, the Dom bombs, in the same way that Cummings did. But there's still quite a lot of interesting things to talk you through that particularly caught my attention. So let's walk you through those. And before I do, if you find this podcast helpful, please subscribe or hit follow if you're listening on Spotify. Leave it 5 stars and a nice review on Apple Podcasts if you would, because it means I'm easier for people to find. And if you want to leave me questions for future episodes that I can answer directly on the podcast, the only way to do it is to follow me on social media at @JuliaBell_X. You can find me with that handle on Twitter and on Instagram. Okay, that's out of the way. Now let's talk about Matt Hancock's testimony, during which he repeatedly insisted how much of an excellent job him and his team have done of the pandemic over the last 18 months. Quite the opposite tone from Cummings, I'm sure you'll agree. Okay, let's just kind of methodically go through the, okay, this is an allegation that Cummings threw. How did Hancock deal with it? And I'll talk you through two or three of the big key ones, and then you can get both sides of the story and essentially make your own mind up. And in fact, actually, if you listened to my podcast a couple of weeks ago, you'll remember that I said, because of the scale of the allegations that Dominic Cummings threw, these are things that would be absolutely fireable if they were proven to be true. Like saying that Matt Hancock barefaced lied to the Prime Minister, stuff like that. Really, that's grounds for a resignation if it's proven. So the committee at the time were like, okay, you can't just say this stuff. You need to back it up with hard evidence. We need copies of emails. We need copies of notes, text messages. Give us proof. Don't just throw this stuff out there. And Dominic Cummings at the time very confidently said, absolutely, yeah, you've got it. I'll get that evidence to you, no problem. And nothing has been submitted since. So the committee are obviously pissed off about that because for them, they can't really take this stuff seriously until they've got, you know, hard evidence that they wanted and they were expecting Dominic Cummings to submit, but he hasn't. And that's a really important point to know. And it's actually a fact that Matt Hancock wasted no time in bringing up today.
Well, it is telling that no evidence has been provided yet. But there's a reason for that, I think, which is that, you know, throughout this, I have got out of bed every morning with the view and the attitude that my job is to do everything I could to protect lives and to get this country out of the pandemic.
There you go. That's Hancock at the Lessons Learned Inquiry today saying it's, quote, telling that Dominic Cummings hasn't submitted any evidence. So basically saying, well, if he hasn't submitted it, then there you go. I told you he was lying. But even without the evidence, we've got to go through these accusations. So let's start with a big one, which was when Cummings accused Matt Hancock of barefaced lying to the Prime Minister about lots of things, but especially testing care home residents. Such a big topic. Let's first of all listen to what Cummings initially said.
We were told categorically in March that people would be tested before they went back to care homes. We only subsequently found out that that hadn't happened. Now, all the government rhetoric was we put a shield around care homes and blah, blah, blah. It was complete nonsense. Quite the opposite of putting a shield around them. We sent people with COVID back to the care homes. But when we realised in April that this had happened, the Prime Minister said, a less polite version of, what on earth are you telling me? Hancock told us in the cabinet room that people were going to be tested before they went back to care homes. What the hell happened?
Okay, so that's the accusation that Matt Hancock allegedly told Boris Johnson that anyone who lives in a care home who's had to go to hospital will be tested for COVID before they return to their care home. That was the promise that Cummings says Matt Hancock made, right? And of course, we all know that, you know, care home residents, the COVID did spread like wildfire in care homes. So something disastrous went on, right? And a lot of people looked at the fact that a lot of these people were not tested when they came back from hospitals. And Hancock's rebuttal to this concept, did you lie or did you not, to the Prime Minister, it was, in my opinion, kind of confusing and a bit weak. Why don't you have a listen?
Did you tell the Prime Minister in March that people in hospitals would be tested before they went back into care homes?
We set out a policy that people would be tested when tests were available. And then I set about building the testing capacity to be able to deliver on that. But in relation to what I told the Prime Minister, of course, the relationship between the Secretary of State and the Prime Minister is often that I make commitments to do things, I get on and do them, and then they're delivered. That's how the relationship works, as you probably know.
So there you go. Basically, Hancock's version of the story was, I told the Prime Minister that I would build the capacity to test care home residents before they returned from hospital. But we didn't immediately have the infrastructure at the time because it was early days and we weren't prepared. So, I don't know, it's like an argument of semantics. Cummings's version was, Matt Hancock told us emphatically these care home residents were being tested. And Hancock's version was, no, I told the Prime Minister I would make it happen and I would test them when we could. Like I say, it feels like an argument over grammar. And you think, okay, maybe this was a miscommunication. In which case, why have we got people who are so bad at communicating in the highest positions in power during a pandemic? That's not an excuse to me, as far as I'm concerned, that between the two men, there's such a misunderstanding. And just on this care home thing, because there's more layers to this, we now know, with hindsight, that COVID spread like wildfire in care homes in this country. A lot of people put it down to this idea that care home residents were coming back from hospitals and they were not being tested for COVID, and therefore they were spreading it amongst the other residents in their care home and nobody knew until it was too late. That's what a lot of people put this down to. Hancock disputed that today. He said, do you know what? It's not even that big a deal that we didn't test that many care home residents returning from hospitals because they didn't even spread that much COVID. They only accounted for a tiny proportion. He said 1.6% of the outbreaks in care homes. So untested care home patients that had come out of hospital were only responsible for 1.6% of the outbreaks. So he actually blamed this care home crisis, the fact that COVID wiped out so many people, he actually blamed it on community transmission. In other words, the people that were not the care home residents themselves, the people like the staff and the GPs and the workers coming in and out of the care homes, they were the problem, according to Matt Hancock. Here's my problem with that, right? I have a lot of problems with quite a lot of what's been said over the past couple of weeks. Here's my problem with this. How can he know that 1.6% of the COVID outbreaks in these care homes were down to untested hospital outpatients? How can he tell that if they weren't tested? Surely the only way you get official data like that is if you test them and then you know, right, this is how much of a proportion of them were positive and this is how we trace back all of this spread. But if they weren't tested, how on earth do we have access to that data? And it seems that I'm not alone in my confusion about Hancock's logic there, because Pete Calverley, the chairman of Barchester Care Homes, which is one of the biggest care home operators in the country, he said on Radio 4 today, quote, I honestly think that is utter nonsense. And that's referring to Hancock's claims that such a tiny proportion of the COVID spread was down to this issue of care home residents being untested coming in from hospitals. I take great issue with some of the things that Hancock said today. A lot of it didn't make a huge amount of sense. I'm not saying that Cummings, therefore, is bang on and that, you know, his account, where Hancock was a total liar, is necessarily true either. I just feel like Hancock was given quite a gentle time of it when it came to this topic today. And I did feel very much like the chairs of the committee were very generous and they didn't really grill him on this when, in my opinion, a lot of it didn't make a huge amount of sense. Okay, if you listened to my Dominic Cummings podcast a couple of weeks ago, you'll remember the story that Dominic Cummings told. And it was like this, he painted it as if it was a movie script. He talked about that period where the government finally decided to take us into a lockdown. And it was kind of this long overdue thing, and nobody knew what was going on for the sort of period of mid-March. And he talked about how, it was an absolutely ridiculous story, he talked about how plan A was to keep society open and to not impose massive restrictions and to let COVID do its thing until we developed herd immunity. Yes, there'll be casualties, but this is the way that we're going. That was plan A. And Cummings said there was no plan B. Lockdown was not on the cards. And, you know, when he tells this story, he talks about, you know, it got to sort of February, early March, and the data was mounting, and key officials were, quote, literally skiing. Don't know if you remember when he said that. So all of this crazy stuff was happening, and key officials were literally skiing, not taking it seriously at all. Then he talks about how he, Dominic Cummings himself, was the unlikely hero, because he's the one that realised, right, we ought to go into lockdown, these figures are getting worse and worse, plan A just won't do. And so he allegedly drew up a plan on a whiteboard in the space of half an hour, and there it was, implemented a few days later. It was a story of chaos and incompetence, and it made you, like, violently angry listening to it because of how disorganised the government sounded. But Cummings, surprisingly enough, of his own story, came out the best. He basically implied that he was the sort of genius behind lockdown. It was all his idea. Interestingly enough, cut to 2 weeks later when it's Hancock's turn, guess who comes out best in Hancock's version of events? He's starting to get a pattern here. So his version was one of caution and preparedness. And it had him, Matt Hancock, looking like the one who realised that plan A was no good and that we ought to impose more restrictions. Have a listen.
I instructed the department and the health system to plan on the basis of a reasonable worst-case scenario in January, in fact, on the 27th of January. And I asked for a reasonable worst-case scenario planning assumption. And that was a planning assumption for 820,000 deaths. And I was determined that that would not happen on my watch. So throughout February, we were planning for how to stop that and how to deal with the consequences of if it came true.
You know, you're literally visiting hospitals, you're talking to people.
So then I remember the moment around the cabinet table when I said, we are going to have to tell everybody to stop all social contact.
Right.
And I remember thinking, this is the most extraordinary thing that I've ever said. And the Prime Minister said, yes, we are. You better go and tell them.
So let's just note at this point, guys, that Matt Hancock is talking about how he got these horrifically scary projected numbers, you know, more than 800,000 deaths. And this is a reasonable worst case scenario, as he put it. And this timeline is February 2020. Let's remember what I was just talking about when I was telling Dominic Cummings' version of this story, when he said that key officials in February were, quote, literally skiing. How can these two versions of the story match up? And the committee itself picked up on that discrepancy. So Sarah Owen, the Labour MP for Luton, who was one of the questioners, and to be honest, she, out of everyone, I think, gave Matt Hancock the hardest time. She was the one that kind of went in on him. Anyway, she said to Matt Hancock, look, Dominic Cummings painted this really chaotic picture. And he said that the working relationship between everyone, but particularly with you, Matt Hancock, was a nightmare. What's your take on that? And Hancock said, I don't know where Cummings is getting that from. We have an exemplary relationship. So me and the other cabinet ministers have this exemplary relationship, and we have done throughout this pandemic. Again, what? If one version is it's total chaos, people aren't communicating properly, there are distinct, like, almost toxic disagreements happening within this cabinet, and then you've got Hancock on the other side saying the word exemplary when he's talking about these relationships. How can, I mean, I get that there's lots of truths to each story, and, like, Matt Hancock's perception of events might have been completely different to Dominic Cummings, but surely not this different. Like, it doesn't sound like they're in the same world, let alone the same building in Downing Street. Okay, let's cover another thing. You know, a Cummings accusation versus a Hancock rebuttal. So in his inquisition 2 weeks ago, Cummings accused Hancock of actively hurting the public interest in order to make himself look good, basically. And it was specifically around this issue of 100,000 tests a day, this pledge that Hancock made.
In my opinion, disastrously, the Secretary of State had made, while the Prime Minister was on his near deathbed, had made this pledge to do 100,000 by the end of April. What then happened when I came back around the 13th was I started getting calls, and Number 10 were getting calls saying Hancock is interfering with the building of the test and trace system because he's telling everybody what to do to maximise his chances of hitting his stupid target by the end of the month. In my opinion, he should have been fired for that thing alone. It was criminal, disgraceful behaviour that caused serious harm.
So there you go. Cummings basically saying that Hancock meddled with the test and trace system and held it up in order to kind of make it match his timelines and his targets, which, I mean, his recollection of it is a fireable offence, and he even said it. It's a fireable offence. Hancock's recollection of it, yet again, are you clocking the pattern yet? Completely opposite. And this one, I feel like this account is the most opposite that it gets. So Hancock made out like he was this genius. Sorry. I just can't believe how, like, one person saying it's fireable and the other person saying I'm a legend. Hancock, yeah, basically said I'm a genius for coming up with this 100,000 tests a day target, because if it wasn't for me setting that target, we wouldn't be where we are now. And he sort of, it was this story of optimism and victory. Have a listen.
Well, we didn't know we were going to hit it. And sometimes you have to put yourself, put yourself in jeopardy. You put yourself on the line. And in this case, I knew we needed a radical increase in the testing capacity, a radical increase, and the incremental increases would not do. And so I set the 100,000 target. And it is a tried and tested method. In fact, it turned out afterwards, I was told that this is an absolutely standard a business school methodology. I've never been to business school, but it turns out, you know, you set a big goal, you galvanise the team, you give everybody confidence just to do what is needed to build this capacity, and it worked.
That was Matt Hancock there on his recollection of this 100,000 tests a day target and how much of a positive thing it was from his perspective. You can see how you feel. This is more of a he said, she said, because it's an account of conversations that happened within Downing Street. And I can't help but think this is just fucking useless for the lessons learned inquiry. Remember the point of this inquiry, right? It's to gather information about the decisions that were made during the pandemic. And it's to work out what went wrong and what went right so we can apply that knowledge in the future and do a better job. If we've got these two guys, like, telling completely opposite stories, how on earth are we meant to know what happened? And then how on earth are we meant to know what went wrong and what went right if we just don't know what happened? These two men are completely undermining the point of this inquiry. It is so frustrating. I don't even know why I'm laughing, because it's shit. We've given Cummings a lot of airtime today, and he wasn't the complete focal point of the entire 4.5-hour conversation. There were definitely other things that cropped up which will pique your interest, so I'll share a couple of those with you. There was a particularly poignant moment when Sarah Owen, the Labour MP, who I mentioned earlier, the one that I felt like gave him the hardest time, she's the MP for Luton, she asked Matt Hancock about PPE. Can't not talk about PPE. Or the distinct lack thereof, I suppose I should say, when it comes to the start of this pandemic anyway. This is what was said.
But I want to take you back about 3 hours when you said, and you told the committee, there was never a national shortage of PPE because of the action we took.
Yes.
How can you say that when we saw with our own eyes nurses in bin bags instead of proper PPE?
Well, I can make that assessment because the National Audit Office came and looked at all of the details here. They found, and I quote, "The NHS provider organisations we spoke to told us that while they were concerned about the low stocks of PPE, they were always able to get what they needed in time." Now, I have acknowledged throughout that there were individual challenges in getting a hold of PPE, but at a national level, there was never a point at which we ran out.
Okay, so Hancock's response there, that there was never a national shortage of PPE, which even speaking those words feels just wrong to me, because every single medical professional I've spoken to, and over the last 18 months, I've spoken to quite a few. I'm a journalist and it's a pandemic, so I'm constantly reaching out to medical professionals to see what the situation is. I have never spoken to anyone who hasn't complained of some sort of PPE shortage. So it does feel, I mean, perhaps it is genuinely a coincidence that I've spoken to people who have had problems and there's been plenty of people without. I'm yet to hear about those people, though. But that has been Matt Hancock's stance, and it's been his stance for a long time, this we've never had a national shortage thing. In fact, you might remember on this podcast a few months ago, I played you that famous clip of Hancock on Good Morning Britain when, oh, it was outrageous. He told Piers Morgan that not only was there no national shortage, but that we ought to thank him and his team for the work that they've done in procuring all of this PPE. So, I mean, I won't play the clip again because you've already heard it a few times on here, but that has been his point of view for a while, and he is sticking to that line. He's not budging on that concept. And again, it feels like the same as the care home thing, an argument about grammar. It's an argument about semantics, I think, because he uses this line of, we never had a national shortage, we only had, quote, local challenges. To me, I don't know if that matters. If we had hospitals up and down the country that didn't have the masks they needed, and people were sharing masks, and people were wearing bin bags as aprons, that is a shortage. And if it's happening in hospitals up and down the country, doesn't that mean it's a national shortage? I mean, is this just an issue of semantics? Because as far as a lot of us can see it, it just feels like if you had staff who were scared to go into work every day because they did not feel protected, it doesn't matter what you call it, does it? That's an issue. And just claiming that we never had a national shortage doesn't solve that problem. And it certainly doesn't solve, in my opinion, the residual mental health battles that a lot of these medical professionals are going to be facing now and for a while, I imagine. Because, I mean, you will have heard on this podcast a few months ago, I spoke to my friend Sebastian, who's a medical professional based in the east of England. And he told that horrifically harrowing story about the fact that he felt for an entire shift that he couldn't go to the bathroom because if he did, he'd have to throw away his mask because, you know, it'd be contaminated and he would need to pick up another one for sanitation. So he felt like, I can't go to the bathroom because we cannot afford for me to use two masks in one shift. We just don't have the PPE for it. We don't have the resources. I hear that story versus the Secretary of State for Health saying we never had a national shortage, and the two things just don't align. And again, another thing that doesn't align with it is Dominic Cummings, obviously. Dominic Cummings' account, which was, of course, that the government's handling of PPE, much like everything else in his opinion, was a total disaster. In fact, do you know what? Something I noticed, like with the Piers Morgan interview where he sort of said, you know, we ought to be thanking my team. Something I've noticed about Matt Hancock is that whenever he was challenged on something or asked a particularly grisly question, he found a way of using it as an opportunity to congratulate himself. It sounds ridiculous, but it's quite a talent, right? It's quite a skill to have that. So if somebody asked him something like, "Why? How could you let this happen?" he would, by the end of his answer, and you'd only notice it because it would happen so gradually, you'd only notice by the time he'd finished speaking that he'd somehow miraculously turned it around to outline his massive successes. Such a talent for doing that. And it kind of multiple times throughout the inquiry, the MPs had to stop him mid-sentence and say, "Sorry, we don't have a huge amount of time. This is a lessons learned inquiry. We really can't spend it listening to you promote yourself. We've got things that we need to do." You might have seen in the news yesterday that a high court officially ruled that the government acted unlawfully when they awarded a contract worth 560 grand to a market research agency, right? So this court found that the government had failed to consider any other options. And the point was, you shouldn't just be awarding such massive contracts, 560 grand of public money. You shouldn't just be awarding contracts like that without looking at the competition, weighing it up, who's the best value for money, who's got the best quality product. So you acted unlawfully. That's what the court found. And granted, the company involved in that was a market research agency. So it wasn't actually directly under Matt Hancock's remit. In fact, the people in the firing line were Michael Gove and Dominic Cummings. however, that news coming out yesterday of the government acting unlawfully with regards to these COVID contracts, that set an awkward tone for today. I mean, the timing of it was tragic. This thing coming out yesterday and then Matt Hancock having to speak today. So, of course, he was asked about contracts and the awarding of them to certain companies. And absolutely no surprises. Matt Hancock insisted the entire time nothing dodgy ever went on. He never had any sway over which companies were used. He never gave deals to his mates. It was always fair and lawful, and there was never any conflict of interest, right? But just seeing this news story come out that the court had ruled the government unlawful 24 hours before over a COVID contract, it planted a seed of doubt in what Hancock was saying. And I really hope for Hancock's sake that nobody digs up any more suspicious PPE contracts, because there's been a few of those already. Incidentally, I did an episode all about that back in November 2020. You can look it up. The title is Dodgy PPE Deals. But because, again, Hancock had this blind confidence, no, nothing dodgy ever went on, you're never going to find anything there, I hope for his sake he's right. I have a question for you. What do your instincts tell you when Matt Hancock speaks versus when Dominic Cummings speaks? Do you get an instinct? Because to be honest, I know it's kind of depressing that this is what we're having to rely on. But it is. These stories are too stark for both of them to be true. So we, much like the committee, are left having to just work off of what we've been told, work off the data, work off what people's accounts are, and listen to our instincts. And what's unfortunate is Matt Hancock, he's never ever going to throw anyone under the bus. Like I said earlier, collective responsibility and this sort of the government always has to have each other's back publicly. So even if Matt Hancock did, you know, disapprove of something that another minister did, for example, he wasn't going to tell us that today. He never, ever said anything negative, particularly about anyone, except Dominic Cummings. he was perfectly comfortable making everyone believe that he thinks he's a massive liar. But then, of course, we can't take everything Dominic Cummings said seriously either, because A, he must be deeply disgruntled because he essentially, we assume, got fired from Downing Street at the end of last year. And it's clear he harbours intense resentment for a lot of the key characters in Downing Street and in the government. And also, he hasn't provided any evidence for anything that he said. So that immediately undermines a lot of what he said as well. So we are left with our instincts. I really want to hear your point of view. Get in touch with me on social media at JuliaBell_X. And you can share your opinions, but you can also use that to message me with questions for future podcast episodes if you want to. Listen, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Say something nice if you found it helpful. And if you want to keep this podcast going, I say it every time, the only way to do that is to become a patron. I do this thing all on my own, for free, for you. I live to do that, but nobody pays me to do it. So why not do the equivalent of buying me a coffee and become a patron? You get access to loads of bonus content, and it is a huge help. Thank you so much for listening. I hope I haven't left your brain too scrambled. Feel free to like decide what you think is right and then completely put this out of your mind. If it's to protect your sanity, I totally understand. To be honest, I'm going to do the same thing too. But I love you guys. Have a good day or night wherever you are, and I will speak to you in the next one. Goodbye.